Hello, everyone. Today is January 21st. My name is Julika. I am the manager of Lifelong Learning. And our conversation today is about sanctuary. And I'm really interested in hearing from you, Randy and Elaine, what brought you to this conversation and where you / your congregation is on the journey to sanctuary. I downloaded a bunch of resources, but I don't know which ones are going to be needed. So in the spirit of learning together and co-creating, let us first establish where each of us is on this journey of learning about sanctuary. Randy, would you mind going first and just saying a little bit more about what brings you here today?
Sure. I'm serving a congregation that has a building that is aging and has not been impeccably cared for. And it was built at a time when the community was three times what it is, not like the larger community, not just the UU congregation, but the larger community was three times what it is today. So it may not be the right size or the right actual facilities for the ministry of today and future. So we're in the process of conversations about what we need from our building and what our building needs from us. And right now, everything is on the table, including just taking care of what we have better, to raising it to the ground and building something that's going to serve us more impeccably. I think some people are even talking about, do we want to keep the same property? Although I'm dubious that they really mean it. But one of the things people have talked about in the congregation is they used to be part of a group of congregations that would house people temporarily when there were families experiencing homelessness. Yeah. This boggles my mind because as far as I know, I've been there, this is my fourth year there, and I have never seen a shower facility or anything like that where people would be able to do the things that I think of as I would expect from someone offering me hospitality, but that this was a thing that happened back in the day. Now, the organization that coordinated that kind of temporary housing has a more central facility. And so they can house people in a more consistent location without there being disruption to children's schooling and all of that stuff. But if that's something that the congregation harkens back to and wants to create space for, then I'm interested in that being a part of how we think about our space.
Yeah, very interesting. First Universalist Minneapolis had something that you described similarly. So I can speak a little bit more to that later. But let's hear from Elaine. Elaine, what brings you here today, and where are you or your congregation in relationship to sanctuary?
Well, I'm here both because I'm interested in the topic and because I'm interested in this new learning community, co-learning community. So, and I came last week and had a great time, and so I'm back again. So, so glad to be here. So, but in terms of sanctuary, so again, we're Monterey County. I think we have the highest percentage of perhaps immigrants without documentation of counties in California. We have a ton of, so it's a huge, I mean, the current roundups and all the fears happening are huge. So our congregation, as they were several years ago, and our congregation, we have a lovely building kind of in the woods. It's not really accessible. It's right off of Highway 1, you know, which kind of goes up and down the coast, but it's in the woods, and it doesn't really have, it's not accessible to public transportation. So there isn't a bus stop, and you can't, there's a bus stop across the highway, but you're not really allowed to walk across the bridge. So anyway, but we do have an apartment in the basement of the building that does have a shower and bathrooms, and it's a studio, but it used to house the sextons. So they used to have live-in sextons that would kind of do the the setup and cleanup and all that. And partly in exchange, they would get the apartment and some pay, but that offset some of their salaries. That ended up becoming quite problematic because housing is in such short supply here that people would take the job because they needed the housing, but they couldn't really do the job. And then it was very unfortunate. The good news is we were able to use the apartment to house interns, but even now, which was a good thing. So, because again, we could offer housing to the intern, and we had two successful interns do that. And now insurance is such an issue in California between wildfires, as we know, and just in general, that Church Mutual cut us off a couple years ago. So we're down, we're now on the California FAIR plan, which is the absolute rock bottom last resort insurance. And even that, we don't now file any claims because we're afraid they'll cut. Anyway, so that's a whole other discussion. Maybe co-learning would be good for sometime, but anyway, we have not housed anyone in it because when we went to the FAIR plan, our broker said, well, don't even, do you have anyone living there now? Well, don't put anyone in there, and don't. So we haven't had an intern for several years because we can't house. Anyway, the church several years ago, because we have this apartment though, in between interns kind of, we did have the discussion about, could we house a family, you know, and we did a lot of listening to other UU churches and what that we're talking about at the time. Again, I think this was the first administration of this. Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be, it became clear there was a lot more than just about offering the space.
Yes.
There's a lot of other types of resources and support needed. And our, I mean, you know, we have like 205 members, but that's not a we're not a huge congregation, you know, and it was feeling like we didn't want to take in folks and then not be able to meet all the needs. And so instead we did more locally, and we're support, there's tons of local organizations that are supporting folks that need help, and it is still a resource that we have. So that's where we are. Sorry. So we still have, it's come up again because
an administration.
Okay.
And Randy, are your people talking about undocumented immigrants as a possible group of people that you might support as you consider space stuff? Or is it more in the domestic people who are currently unhoused?
The congregation is in such an open conversation about the space right now that they're not really focused on any particular ministry. There are so many different ways that it can go that there's not a laser beam focus to what they hope for at this point. We're still in an early place in those conversations.
Okay, thank you. Well, I will say that this was one of the topics identified in the survey that we sent to ministers after the election. What are the topics that you're most interested in? This was one of them, which is why I brought it to the table earlier. But I also am very aware that a lot more can be done around immigration through executive order with this new administration. And so I think also I feel a certain sense of urgency about wanting to help colleagues prepare, because some of this might come down a lot faster than others of the things listed in Project 2025 or just in general nefarious sadnesses. So what would be a useful use of this time for each of you, given where you are? And like, give me a little bit of a more narrow question or a longing or something that you would like, because I literally have like 6 tabs ready to share. And I don't know which one to start with.
Well, I will say that there are individuals within the congregation that I serve who are active in like Faith Choice Ohio, that tries to make sure that people are receiving the access to reproductive care and the justice issue of trans folks being able to move to a place where they feel safe and receive the care that they need. And so in addition to the building of the congregation, the shared space there being a potential sanctuary, I know that there are also individuals within the congregation who have made an active commitment to housing people that need a temporary way station. And so I don't know if there is a need for those kind of networked sanctuaries that are not the congregation's building. But that would be something that I think members of the congregation I serve would certainly be interested in learning more about, and feeling that there was a network of support for that kind of activism?
That is a great question. There is, and I will say more about it. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. Do you mind, Elaine? I'm just going to, yeah, okay. Because that's more of like a question answer thing rather than an exploration. Are you familiar with Pink Haven, Randy? That is the best way to channel your congregation's interests and efforts in moving, particularly trans folks who don't feel safe, and helping them relocate, even if it's just sort of on the way to, or and my understanding is that the folks at Pink Haven are doing a really great job of organizing around that. So specifically to that, I would point them there.
We are connected with Pink Haven, and I'm grateful to have that affirmation of what we're currently doing. So that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And also thank you for expanding the understanding of sanctuary beyond the traditional sort of our building with a shower or not a shower. Like there's a lot of different mutual aid, sanctuary support stuff that I think can be more complex. So I really appreciate how you just lifted that up. Elaine, do you have a question?
Well, mine's sort of related to that idea of other ways that we can be of support. Again, we do have this apartment and it has come, you know, it's, but again, that would be sort of one fit, you know, there's,
yeah.
And I'm trying to encourage our folks, again, there are so many people around, we're still, you know, here we are in Monterey County, you know, which is, I think, again, 55% or more first language is Spanish of people in the county. But our little UU congregation is predominantly white. Some people speak Spanish, but it's not, you know, the typical issues. And sometimes our folks are very gung-ho and they want to, but I'm pushing them to support other local organizations on the ground that are much more, we're a part of a COPA, which is our community organizing group. It's an Saul Alinsky Foundation, whatever it is.
Is it PICO? No.
No, PICO isn't. So the problem, it's sort of this, the community organizations kind of alternate. So there's in the Bay Area, there's a variety of ones. The one that's here in Monterey and Fresno and over is COPA, which is
Isaiah
Foundation.
No.
Forum. So anyway, it's.
It doesn't matter.
But they do a lot. So we're a member of them and we work with them. But again, I'm just also looking to broaden it because I think so often it was, and I grew up in the Pittsburgh congregation, and they also were involved way back in the, I don't know, 70s with, again, housing people or temper, you know, coming through. So again, I remember nostalgia about that. But I think there are a lot of other opportunities. And I think we're perhaps not the best. Our people are great, but I think we'd be much better using our time and energy and resources to help support other organizations in the area. And I could be wrong about that, but I sort of feel like sometimes we want to do our own little thing to do our own little thing. And I'm not sure that's the most effective
I agree. And I would like to think that if you are meant to use your building to house someone, it's because someone will ask you, because you're already in relationship and it will come up and there will be an opportunity. So, all right, given the things that you've said so far, I think I know which tab to start with. I'm going to share some things and put some things in the pot, and then we'll talk some more, and we'll see what it stirs up for you. So let me share my screen. We love the fairies. The fairies love us. Everything works. Is that true? Do you see a map? Yes.
Okay, yes.
Great. So this map is in the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. And I'm just showing it to you so that you have that resource. I will email you the all of the links that I'm going to share. I will drop this link in the chat right now. But basically, this very fancy map is, you can like scroll over it and it gives you information about state laws and immigration enforcement as of last year, which I think is very, very useful. And we can see here that Oregon and Illinois are the ones that are most pro, the dark green, and that Florida, Texas, Iowa are the darkest purple and least friendly to immigrants. So resource you can use, etc. Let me, I don't know, this bar that like the Zoom gets in the way. Can't see. Chat. Okay. There's that. And the other thing I want to bring to your attention based on what you've mentioned is
just, it's going to depend. Shh.
Don't talk. The UU College of Social Justice and UU Rise did some webinars right after the first Trump administration took office. I see you nodding, Elaine. Have you interacted with UU Rise?
I think we did something back then that we, again, that was part of, I think, where we might have gotten the information about all the more things involved, but maybe not. So I'm happy to have this again. If so, I'd forgotten. So thanks.
Okay. So UU Rise, Randy, do you know, it's a California Resources for Immigrants organization.
I have heard of them. I haven't had a lot of interaction with UU Rise.
Okay. I sent them an email earlier today saying, I'm going to boost you. Let me know what else. And they haven't responded. So I don't know what, because, you know, everything was last minute. But it's really impressive, the work that they did. And they did some really good webinars here with the College of Social Justice. The only thing about these webinars that's a little challenging for me is they're each 2 hours. And they're not indexed, and they're not anything. They're just people talking for 2 hours. And they did a really good job of, like, first we're going to do this, and now we're going to have this other person. And, you know, no one person speaks than more than 15 minutes, but you have to watch the whole thing. I was trying to find a clip to share, and I couldn't. What I did find, hopefully this one is going to cooperate with me. Yes. So
historical involvement.
No, don't talk. Be quiet. Okay. As you can see here, there is the UU Rise created a process for sanctuary congregations to assess whether your congregation was in the right place to do sanctuary work. And so I'm going, for the purposes of the recording, for people who might not be seeing this but might be just listening, I'm going to just quickly read down this list. They want you to assess your role of social justice. Who's doing social justice in your congregation? Is it just 4 people? And is everyone else not connected? That's one of the things that you want to consider. Do you have a historical involvement in immigration rights? Is this something that your congregation already takes pride in or is connected to on an emotional level? Are you in accountable relationships in the community such that your sanctuary work is in relationship to the communities that need the sanctuary support? Does your congregation have a commitment to cross-cultural competency? Is your congregation comfortable with uncomfortable conversations? Is your congregation comfortable with conflict? Is your congregation comfortable with risk? And then, you need to do a discernment of the design of like how you would want to do this. So, gosh, I really love this list. I think that this is a really good, comprehensive, like, big picture. Yeah, these are the things that we need to consider. We can't just start willy-nilly but on the other hand, I think I think the other challenge is that sanctuary decisions are made very fast. So there's this combination of preparation and Katya Hansen is the president and CEO of UU Rise, and in these webinars, which I will share the link. Where are they? Mm-hmm. Okay, the webinars are on this page from UUSC, putting it in the chat. So link to the webinars are there, plus other resources. Katya says gold standard, you spend some time doing it in advance without having the need to offer sanctuary to anyone. But you have a process where the congregation has engaged it, has voted, and is ready. I'll stop. Questions, reactions? I think I brought it back down to the narrow definition of sanctuary, but that's okay.
This was really good because what this is affirming for me is that the congregation that I'm serving is doing some of the work that they will need to do before they make a decision about any of this. Mm-hmm. Because we are talking about what kind of relationships do we need to foster in the larger community. And it right now, I don't think there would be disagreement in what I'm about to say. We don't have as many of those relationships as what we might want.
Yeah.
Being more comfortable with conflict, recognizing that there is such a thing as healthy conflict, and being able to lean on our shared values and our covenant in order to navigate those things together in a way that is still loving and compassionate. That's stuff we're working on. We're working on those bullet points, and not in a sequence. I mean, we're working on a few of those things all at once. So
yeah. Because that's how we do this work, right?
It's, yeah.
It would be nice to have things be linear, but they're not. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe linear is overrated. Well, I'm glad that's helpful. One of the challenges that I see in anti-racism work, and under which I would place sanctuary work, is you use being really ambitious and wanting to do the really complicated, sophisticated thing, but wanting to skip the steps to actually prepare the right foundation for that. And I don't know. Well, I do know, actually. Join me next week. I have this idea for a scaffolding that creates containers for people to be able to get more sophisticated in their anti-racism work. And I had not considered it until this moment, but usually in the most sophisticated level, I put abolition and reparations. Those are the conversations that can clear a room pretty fast. Like, people really have a hard time with. I actually think maybe sanctuary is also one of those conversations. I think sanctuary is equally complex and requires pretty sophisticated level of humility, willing to follow, willing to make mistakes, things that you don't see in UU congregations as a cultural habit. Because we haven't decentered white supremacy culture in many ways, right? Because we have a lot of perfectionism, and I'm the only one, and, you know, I'm going to play on a stereotype for a second, but when, you know, a team has like three professors who want to design a process, like, there's a lot of like authority in the room. There's a lot of, I know how to do this, let me make a spreadsheet, rather than tell me how I can help. Yes, Elaine.
Yeah, very helpful stuff. I guess the other thing that comes up, the word that I've been hearing a lot more often now too, is accompaniment. And I think how that sort of connects in my mind to sanctuary, because you can accompany a lot more people than you can house in one apartment, you know, and it relates both to the trans folks and the immigrant, you know, and there's a lot going on. I think Heather Vickery from the UU College of Social Justice she's coming to do a talk out here about accompaniment at the California State University, Monterey Bay, but then she's going to preach at the church too. But I'm just thinking about that sort of intersection, and that we have a lot more, housing someone is good, and accompaniment can even involve more people and affect more people. So I'm just thinking about that. And I'm also struck at how even the UU Rise, so I was remembering they were the group that helped organize some border, excellent. I went down to a border trip, which was completely mind-blowing, and met Katya and a whole bunch of, and then really haven't heard much. And I went on their site and it's hard to tell how active, and I'm so struck. Our Monterey County Rapid Response Network, you know, that were formed all throughout the state, each county, and I'm also on the local ACLU board, and they, of course, are starting to, again, but it's almost like we're, I don't know if we've been living in denial or what, but all of a sudden, the Monterey County Rapid Response Network is not active. I mean, the website's still there, but it's almost like in the last 4 years, I don't know, people sort of coasted, or I don't know, there wasn't the need. And so now everybody's like, frantically trying to get up to speed. So anyway, I just think we need to, I'm trying to be, because my, you know, people in the church want information now and they want to know what they could do. I'm like, you know what? We were in a bit of a lull. I mean, there wasn't, you know, we weren't afraid of people, you know, we had, ICE was not even coming into the jails here for a few years there, which I'm sure that's going to change. But anyway, so just thinking about, I'm thinking both of those things, trying to, the time factor and ramping up and trying to be gentle with ourselves and these other organizations as they ramp up. And I'm just trying to think how there might be ways that of that accompaniment as well to fit in with Sanctuary. Does that make sense?
So much so. So to the accompaniment piece, I want to name, I also think accompaniment involves more people in your congregation. So it is a better thing to engage or to encourage when people are like, immigration, they're like, yes, over here, accompaniment people over here. This is what we're going to do, because it involves more people. It is a sobering reality check. So it is actually a praxis opportunity for our people to actually get a much more, his name, where did it go? He encourages us to get proximate.
Brian Stevenson,
Equal Justice Initiative. Yes, thank you. So this sort of proximity really changes the way that we understand what's going on. So thank you for raising that, Elaine, because I think that I'm going to take away from this conversation my homework to find out, like, who's doing accompaniment and how can I connect ministers to accompaniment resources as one of the ways that we can do this work. Heather Vickery is Pink Haven. That's what she's doing now. So I'm so glad she's coming. I love her.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
We love the work that Heather's doing. And she did used to do more accompany work. In fact, we did some accompaniment webinars with the American Friends Service Committee during the first Trump administration, I think it was, which was a really interesting experience because we did them bilingually. So I was translating into Spanish while we were doing it. It was really cool. Now I need to go look for those as well. I wonder if they hold up. One of the things that I wanted to name too is that what you're describing, I'm seeing also in the larger UU world of like a scramble, like, and literally like half of the things that I downloaded are at the beginning of 2017. Like we are having a do-over. And some of our websites were, we're not kept live or we're not updated. So I reached out to our colleagues in the College of Social Justice, and I'm going to share another link. This one, I'm not going to share the screen. I'm just going to share the link itself because it is a 44-page document that has a lot of words. But it is a very nice 44-page document that I want you to have that is the Sanctuary Toolkit. And it has like step by step of a bunch of things. So I hear the pivot to accompaniment is a really good recommendation. I hear that we are having this sort of renewed wave of anxiety and concern about the second Trump administration. What else do the two of you notice, need, want to say?
Can I brag a little bit on the congregation I serve?
Come on.
Well, first, I'm noticing that we seem to be on a threshold of willingness that different people are crossing it at different times, willingness to reach out beyond our wisdom and our little silos and to see what other communities are doing and to find out, even just UU Institute courses are starting to, people are starting to have an interest in that. But one of the things that we have been engaged in, and I'm impressed with the number of people within the congregation who have engaged with this work, is pre-trial support.
Oh.
Because there was a push with our version of the neighborhood community thing. Greater Cleveland Congregations has been pushing for ending the cash bail system, but that isn't going to happen anytime soon. In the meantime, there are people who need some kind of support before they get to trial. And I think we're one of the first church organizations that is doing this work directly. And some of the people that have been in this kind of accompaniment have been recognizing that there are people's lives that they are not going to see just transformed. Mm-hmm. There is a humility that we can only do so much to help, but we can do something to help. Mm-hmm. There are some recognitions that partnership with other community organizations is essential. We can't do everything ourselves. We have to rely on other outlets for support, and coordinating that support is as important as providing, you know. So there are lots of really great bits of learning that are happening that that I think fit right into what you were saying about accompanying, Elaine. And I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, but that bit of work is fresh. There's energy behind it, and it's engaging people in the congregation in ways that are opening them up to vulnerability and an understanding of what some of the needs are that they would never see, that would be invisible to them over the course of their day-to-day life.
That's amazing. How did this start? And what would you recommend for other colleagues if they wanted to start doing some accompaniment work like this?
It started through a partnership with the Bail Project, because there were some individuals in the congregation that were enthusiastic about that. And we still do support the Bail Project financially, but that particular partnership, there were just some legal ramifications for them and for us that just didn't seem like it was going to be a smooth fit. Mm. And so we started, those people that were really interested in that partnership started looking for things. And we had a congregant that left a very generous bequest, and some portions of that money were able to be used to pay a part-time contractor to say, here are the things that you need to do, and to provide a framework from the social worker perspective that is right there in the legal system. Now they're connected with different organizations, the Public Defender's Office and a local university that has a program. And so they're getting those connections to the point where that consultant is probably not going to need to be a paid part of the program forever.
That is really cool.
But yeah, the having the financial resources to say we're going to pay somebody that knows what we need to know rather than assume that we are the experts, I think was a big piece of it.
Yeah. Well, we need to get this consultant to work with other UU churches now. We need to just continue this next. That's very cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Elaine, what you thinking?
No, I'm saying it's super cool. And I think those same then skills, and once you sort of aren't such a newbie, when people have gone through that experience, then they can transfer that easier other places, right? I mean, because again, there's right. going to be a company, you know,
yep.
kind of stuff needed with courts and immigrants, and, you know, it's going to be, it's the need is going to continue. So that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
And I do think going to someone is, having some, we've done some court watching here, and I've done it with a couple different groups, a few church members, but it's been other, like our Surge chapter did some, the NAACP, I did it with the NAACP, I did it with another group, because I was a public defender for, I don't know, 2 years, so not much, but enough to know how much people don't know about how it works. So, and it makes such a huge difference showing up in court, especially if you're a bunch of, you know, middle-class white people showing up with all sorts of defendants, it makes a difference. But just keeping it going and getting it organized, and also even advising people on the best thing to do, because so often the attorneys are so busy, they don't, anyway. So that's awesome. I'm very impressed. And it makes such a difference. I mean, makes such a huge difference. So.
And I just want to be clear that I cannot take credit for any of this. All I do is tell them how amazing they are and make announcements about the trainings and stuff. They are the ones doing the heavy lifting on this.
Your support is key, I have no doubt. So,
well, that's what shared ministry looks like, right? Like the congregation has a ministry. It's not your ministry, it's the congregation's ministry. I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
So in the spirit of the what, so what, now what framework of a conversation, now what? What are you noticing? What else do you need? What else? What's next? What question are you taking with you?
Well, the what I'm taking from this is that we're currently doing the work that we need to do in order to even have a conversation later on about being a sanctuary congregation, a physical sanctuary for people, and that most immediately, I think I might be the one to invite this question into our conversation about the building, because other people may not be connecting the things that they're proud of doing historically with things that might be needed in the future. So even if we can't really have this conversation just yet, we're talking about potential needs of a physical space that this might be preparation for a vision that hasn't emerged yet. So that's kind of a challenging question to float into this conversation about our building, but I think that's the very next thing, and then to continue doing the work that we are doing and to get better at the companioning that we are doing and the getting more comfortable with conflict and building the relationships that are going to open the way for what needs are ours to hold for the future of our community.
Yeah. I saw an article on Facebook, I don't know where I saw it, about a church, again, I don't remember where, Madison, somewhere in the Midwest, that raised their building and decided to build affordable housing. And then had like a sanctuary in the lower, like, you know, but like everything, they made a building. So I'm excited to hear how this progresses for your congregation, Randy, because I think that there's some big picture questions and bigger risks that I think we need to start taking to really live into, you know, the video that we watched last week, Elaine, where the framing was, we are all we need. Like we in the community, like micro community organizing. I'm gonna be listening and watching, Randy. I'm excited for you. I also think that I would recommend, how do I say this? Have high expectations of your people. Be prophetic. Just because they haven't thought of it, or just because this is like a leap for them, you don't know what's going to catch fire. I remember when I was a graduate student instructor, like my undergrad students did much better than the other grad students. And the professor was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm expecting them to do their work. What do you mean? Like, I just like, so there's an expectation piece that I've really noticed in facilitation, like how you expect things to go is how they go. How does that land for you? I hope that that doesn't feel like too weird of a challenge.
No, it feels like a very appropriate challenge because I spent the first couple of years cultivating trust, and I'm still doing that in some spaces, but it is the year that I'm spending a lot less time on the balcony watching things and being on the ground, on the floor with people, challenging some things, asking questions. My question of choice right now is, why is this important for us to do, and how does this fit in with our vision as a spiritual community? Because there's a lot of things that we do just because it seems like a good idea, or somebody demanded it, or we did it before. And so now just asking the question of why are we doing this is my favorite question of the moment. And the idea of helping people wrestle with that question because they don't have an answer to it is, I think, the right place to head with it without needing to have the answers myself. Just to wonder, is this something that we want to think about without saying you ought to, you know, that. So it's a tough line to walk, but I think that it's the right counsel. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate you receiving it. And that just reminded me of something else that I instantly must share. So let me go get it. Have you seen Sue Phillips's sweet spot model? Okay, I'm glad you haven't seen it because I'm excited to be the one that shares it with you. I'm dropping it in the chat. It is this model that she uses to, and I'll also share my screen so that you can see it, to see how, to help congregations really understand why they're choosing what they're choosing. And it's, here's a bigger version. You want to help people find the intersection of this. Impact, will, capacity, competency, and mission. And I think often there's a lot of will, there's a lot of competency. Sometimes we have high levels in some of these, but that sweet spot idea that we need to be in all of them. So I offer you this because maybe you can use this with your people to say, and also, is this a sweet spot?
Yeah, I love this. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. What's next for you, Elaine?
I'm struck with it feels like there's just a lot of tension between the need is so urgent all of a sudden now, and it's just knowing it's just going to take time. So, we need to be urgently moving ahead and recognizing that, you know, it could, yeah. And yeah, so that's, I guess, what I'm thinking of. And again, I just am looking for more places. We have some partnerships. We could certainly use more. And again, even some of the other groups that formed in 2017, even our local groups that helped go do presentations in the schools for helping parents fill out the forms if they got taken away, who would take their kids. I mean, all that stuff. We did all that, you know, there was all these, you know, and those teams then dried, you know, they're not the same people, can't do, you know. So again, the things are there, but it's just,
they're revitalizing. It's like watering to see what is still alive.
Yeah. And the stuff that isn't, we've got to grow it again quick.
Uproot, fill the soil and start over.
And thankfully, I mean, we are in that almost, we're not the darkest green state, but we're pretty dark.
But you're getting there. California. Yeah.
California's pretty good. And there's already been raids. I mean, there were raids in Bakersfield last week, and I heard yesterday there were more, you know, ice raids in the fields. And though, so they're just scaring everyone, and it's just, yeah, it's just horrible. So there's, yeah, it is pretty urgent. So that's all. But no, I appreciate this. I appreciate the resources, and I look forward to, yeah. And I'm glad that people are, I mean, it's wonderful to have different congregation members come up to me each week, you know, well, you know, we really need to do something. I'm like, I agree. We do. And there's other people that agree too. And so we're trying to figure out where we can best you know, help support and focus our efforts. So it's good. The will, we're on the sweet spot. We're pretty good with the will part, I think. But, you know, I think we, competence, you know, we gotta work some more on those, but I'm going to find that tool helpful as well. So thank you. Appreciate it.
And I'm reminded of a phrase. I don't remember who said it. Maybe Napoleon. I learned it in Spanish. So this tells you how old it is because I was a kid when I learned it. Despacio porque tengo prisa. Go slow because I'm in a hurry. So this idea that yes, we it is urgent. We need to do it. So let's be really thoughtful. And do it well. And I think the other thing for me is, how can we get ready to follow? How can we get ready to follow what is about to emerge? Including our colleagues at Side with Love. So that's I have so many takeaways from this conversation, and I feel like I have 3 or 4 homework assignments. This has been so great. Thank you very much. Is there anything that you would like to say by way of takeaway or closure or anything else?
Well, I really appreciate this, and I feel bad because it did feel like you're saying, oh, I have to do that and I have to do that. And this wasn't meant to make more work for you.
Oh, in a good way. No, this is my work.
All the good work you've done. I know, but I
want this work. I want this work.
I know, but I appreciate it. No, it has been very, very helpful, Rich, and great to meet you, Randy, and hear about the good work you're doing. And also the play, you know, we're all trying to help keep on moving forward. Right. But
right.
Know, so
yeah, great to see you too, Elaine. And I love your facilitation. Look, every time I'm with you, you just have an energy and a vibrance to what you're sharing. And so it helps me to be excited about what comes next. So it's very infectious, and I just really appreciate being in a space with you.
I received that gratefully. Thank you. Come back next week. We're going to talk about anti-racism.
I'll do my very best. If not Tuesday, hopefully Thursday.
Thursday evening, yes. Okay. And my blessings to you, colleagues. May your ministry continue to flourish. May this week and the next month and this everything of the next season, may it be easier than you expected. May small coincidences and miracles multiply, that you are able to do your good work. Blessings.